Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayet. Nasta Prayeshwa Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. We're reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 2, Text 5. This is another one of the classic purports by Srila Prabhupada from this chapter. And as I mentioned this morning, we'll be doing an overview this morning of the verses 5 through 23 in this second chapter, which is Sutta's answers, initial answers to the six questions posed by the sages of Naimisharanya. So these 18 verses are they're connected in a subtle way. This chain of thought is rather subtle, but it is very consistent. And individually, each verse is eminently memorable and useful in teaching Krishna consciousness. So over the next 2 weeks, we'll be having classes on nearly every one of them. This section of Srimad Bhagavatam has an incomparable number of prominent verses all put together. There's other sections that have similar strings, but not as long, like when Prahlad Maharaj is speaking to his schoolmates, or Lord Rishabhdev is speaking to his sons in the fifth canto. But here in the first canto, these answers by Sutta Goswami just explain the entire process of bhakti yoga in 18 verses, the how and the why. So if you learn these verses, you can teach Krishna consciousness, you can teach Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. If you don't learn any others from Srimad Bhagavatam, these 18 would be the ones to learn. So they do flow together, yes. Although, again, it's a bit subtle. So we'll read this. Actually, verse 5 is a preliminary verse, so we're going to read the verse in purport, discuss that a little bit, and then we'll read the 18 verses in a row and discuss them as a whole. Okay? So starting with text 5. Muniya sadhu prishtoham. Bhavadbhir lokamangalam. Yat krita krishna samprashno. Yenatma suprasidati. Munayak sadhu prishtoham. Bhavadbhir lokamangalam. Yat krita krishna samprashno. Yenatma suprasidati. Munayak sadhu prishtoham. Bhavadbhir lokamangalam. Yat krita krishna samprashno. Yenatma suprasidati. Please chant. Munaya sadhu prishtoham. Bhavadbhir lokamangalam. Yat krita krishna samprashno. Yenatma suprasidati. Munaya sadhu prishtoham. Bhavadbhir lokamangalam. Yatkrita Krishna Samprashno. Inatma Supraciditi. Munaya Sadhu Prishtoham. Bhavadbhir Lokamangalam. Yatkrita Krishna Samprashno. Inatma Supraciditi. Munaya Sadhu Prishtoham. Bhavadbhir Lokamangalam. Yatkrita Krishna Samprashno. Yenatma Supraciditi. Okay, very good. Just a short Sanskrit note here. When there is an H with a dot under it, in the course of the sentence, of the line, it is pronounced uk, like a K almost, uk. Huh? And if it happens at the end of the sentence, it is pronounced aha. Okay? Right. So munaya sadhu prishtoham bhavadbhir lokamangala. Okay? Yat krita krishna samprashna. Okay? All right. Munayaha. O sages, sadhu, this is relevant. Prishta, questioned. Aham, myself, bhavadbhi, by all of you. Loka, the world. Mangalam, welfare. Yat, because. Krita, made. Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Samprashnaha, relevant question. Yena, by which Atma, self, supraciditi, completely pleased. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self.
Since it has been stated herein before that in the Bhagavatam, the absolute truth is to be known, the questions of the sages of Naimisharanya are proper and just, because they pertain to Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the absolute truth. In Bhagavad Gita 15.15, the Personality of Godhead says that in all the Vedas, there is nothing but the urge for searching after Him, Lord Krishna. Thus the questions that pertain to Krishna are the sum and substance of all the Vedic inquiries. The whole world is full of questions and answers. The birds, the bees and men are all busy in the matter of perpetual questions and answers. In the morning the bird in the next become busy with questions and answers. And in the evening also the same birds come back and again become busy with questions and answers. The human beings, unless he is fast asleep at night, is busy with questions and answers. The businessmen in the market are busy with questions and answers. And so also the lawyers in the court and the student in the school and colleges. The legislatures in the parliament are also busy with questions and answers. And the politicians and the press representatives are all busy with questions and answers. Although they go on making such questions and answers for their whole lives, they are not at all satisfied. Satisfaction of the soul can only be obtained by questions and answers on the subject of Krishna.
Krishna is our most intimate master, friend, father, or son, and object of conjugal love. Forgetting Krishna, we have created so many objects of questions and answers, but none of them are able to give us complete satisfaction. All things but Krishna give temporary satisfaction only. So, if we are to have complete satisfaction, we must take to the questions and answers about Krishna. We cannot live for a moment without being questioned or without giving answers, because the Srimad Bhagavatam deals with questions and answers that are related to Krishna. We can derive the highest satisfaction only by reading and hearing this transcendental literature. One should learn the Srimad Bhagavatam and make an all-around solution to all problems pertaining to social, political, or religious matters. Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna are the sum total of all things.
Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. You can just imagine Srila Prabhupada sitting in the Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan, this ancient historic temple, in a very simple room, and writing this purport. He is talking about this subject of questions and answers. So before giving the answers to these six questions that were raised in chapter 1, Sutta Goswami first praises all of the sages for asking such good questions. It's harder to ask a good question, generally speaking, than to give an answer. It takes more thought to ask a good question. In courtroom dramas, you would see this. You know, the lawyers are trying to phrase their question in just such a way to get the proper effect from the witness, right? So this is why lawyers are such a highly skilled profession and why they earn so much money, because they are trained to think, to pose their questions in just the right way. So there are different kinds of questions and they have different effects. A closed-end question is one that can be answered only with yes or no. So a closed question is good when you want somebody to stop speaking. If you want someone, if somebody's going on, then you're going to ask them a closed question, and that, then they're forced to give you a one-word answer. Okay. On the other hand, open-ended questions encourage a person to speak. So, an open-ended question is useful for spiritual inquiries or for relationship building. If you want to hear from someone about a spiritual topic at length, then you ask them an open-ended question. If you want somebody to like you or somebody to listen to you and understand what you have to say, open-ended questions are very useful for that purpose. If you start by giving a lecture showing all the things that you know, then people generally get bored after about 5 minutes. So a classic technique in relationship building is to start by finding out about the other person. Whether this other person is favorable or unfavorable to you doesn't matter. The more you know about them, the better. Right, the better you can then present what it is you would like to say to them. And also they will know that you have a genuine interest in them as an individual. They don't know, they don't care what you know until they know that you care. Hold your questions, please. Well, you are more than welcome to get up and deal with it. Thank you. So, Prabhupada had a comment about the bug sitting on the Vyasasana, but that's another topic. He just said, because the bug is sitting on the Vyasasana does not mean he's become the spiritual master. So, by asking good questions, you can also lead people to have their own realizations. Okay? This is called the what method of learning? The Socratic method of learning. Yes, Socrates was famous as a teacher, but in his classes he would simply sit and ask questions. And he would question his students. And through these questions, they would come to realize the lesson that he was trying to impart to them. He could have just come out and said it, But he got them to come to the conclusions themselves, and therefore they were their conclusions, not his. See? So this takes a great deal of patience and thought. And therefore I'm saying to ask a good question is much harder than to give a good answer. So because I had very little time to prepare for class this morning, I'm not going to ask many questions. But I would like to talk about a little bit more about the subject of questioning. I know. And give a demonstration, if you will indulge me, about how questions can be phrased to lead one to the conclusion that you have. Okay, would you like to see that? All right, it's a telepathic demonstration. So we need somebody who's very intuitive. I need a volunteer. Olivia? Okay. Are you familiar with a deck of cards, Olivia? Do you know what I mean, the suits and the... Okay. I need another volunteer who is familiar with a deck of cards. Okay, Andrea? All right. Actually, let's do Clayton. So we have a little cross-action. The telepathic vibrations generally go better straight out of the forehead than from the side. Okay. Okay. So, Olivia, I need you to come here and write down a card of your choice. Don't tell anybody. Don't show anybody except me, okay? Pick a card, yes. Pick a card, any card that you... Okay, just write it right there. Okay. Clayton, I need you to clear your mind of all of the thoughts. Okay? That would be a good start. Okay, very good. So don't tell anyone now. Yes, yes, and just try to be receptive to telepathic information transmitted by Olivia. Okay, are you ready? So Olivia, I need you to really concentrate on that card. Okay, Clayton, I just have a few questions for you. Okay, you are familiar with a deck of cards, right? Okay, so in a deck of cards there are red cards and black cards. Which of those would you prefer? Okay, and that leaves... if we eliminate the black cards, that leaves what color? Okay. So among the red cards, there are diamonds and there are hearts. Which of those suits would you prefer? Okay. Now amongst the diamonds, there are face cards and there are number cards. Face cards including the ace. Which of those groups would you prefer? No, groups. Face cards, okay, goodness. And that leaves... Okay, so among the number cards, there are odd and even numbers. Which of those groups would you prefer? Okay, and that leaves... Okay, now among the odd cards, there are 5 and greater and less than 5. Which would you prefer? Okay, so that gives us actually 3 cards. Okay. Of the 5, 7, and 9, which of those would you prefer? Okay. Olivia, what was your card? Here it is. Oh, amazing. Telepathy works. It works. Okay, so what was I doing? What was it? I'm just asking questions, right? I knew the conclusion. Clayton did not. But just by asking the right questions, we got Clayton to the conclusion. See? So similarly, we can go and tell somebody all about Krishna and all about Bhagavad Gita and all about Srimad Bhagavatam, and they will become glassy-eyed. But if we ask them a question, even as simple as, how are you doing? I'm thinking of a line from McKendra's songs I've been listening to lately. My neighbor said, how are you doing? I said, my whole life's in ruins. I'm a mess. I need professional help. My neighbor said, next time, keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
then I would have said, that leaves what? Right, but if we ask people, how are you doing? That is an open-ended question. That encourages them to speak. Open-ended questions begin with how or what. Okay, how or what begin open-ended questions. Okay, how are you doing? What's happening? That encourages the person to speak. Now, on the other hand, interrogatory questions begin with why. So that infers judgment. Why did you do that? Okay, that infers that, and that will tend to make a person feel less inclined to communicate. So it takes a little bit of thought to turn a why question into a what question, just for an example. Like, why did you leave a mess in the kitchen? How would you feel if I asked you that question? Why did you leave a mess in the kitchen? How would you feel? Defensive, yes. Intimidated, yes. So, how could we rephrase that question to be an open-ended question? Can you keep the kitchen clean? No. No, not particularly. Before we go on, just want to catch. Did you catch Shruti Sagar's question? Can you ask it again? No. Okay. So, what kind of question was that? That was a closed question. It can only be answered yes or no. Okay? So it doesn't encourage open communication. So can you rephrase it as an open-ended question? Olivia, you want to try? No? No? Good try, but not quite. Mike? Nothing, thanks. nothing, thank you. That's better. Okay, that's more general. It can even be more general than that, or more encouraging the other person to speak. That's good. Yeah. Now you're getting the idea. Okay. So yeah, what do you think about the mess in the kitchen? This is, you see the difference? Why is the kitchen a mess? It's accusatory. What do you think about the mess in the kitchen? Let's discuss this philosophically. See? It's not accusatory. It's not intimidating. It's just, what do you think about it? I would like to understand your... I'm not going to come to any conclusion until I understand your point of view. See the psychology there? So this is a good question. A question that does not make the other person put up a wall. You know? So what do you think about it? Open-ended questions. Great for relationship building. And great for philosophical inquiries. So the sages asked many open-ended questions in chapter 1. What was the first question they asked? Do you remember? What is the absolute and ultimate good for all human beings? I mean, can you imagine a more open-ended question than that? So this is their first question. What is the ultimate good for all human beings? And of course, that question is answered by the next verse, which, due to scheduling, Sesha Prabhu spoke about on Wednesday. What is that verse? Svai Pum Sam Paro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Arhosije. Right. The ultimate good, for the supreme occupation for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. Right. So, when you are dealing with anyone, whether they're less advanced than you, equally advanced, or more advanced, asking an open-ended question is always appropriate. It always encourages communication. So in this case, the sages were actually more advanced in many respects than Sutta Goswami. Do you know this story? Sutta means what? What does the word sutta mean? It means son. Yeah. Suta Goswami was the son of Romaharshana. Romaharshana Suta. Yeah. So Romaharshana was the speaker to these sages. They had elected him the leader and asked him to give them knowledge. So there at Namishiranya, Lord Balaram came. He was on pilgrimage because he was mad at Krishna. Because Krishna had taken sides in the war of Kurukshetra. See? Even though he was very diplomatic about it, he gave his whole army to Duryodhana, and he was alone on the side of Arjuna, because Arjuna was his friend. But Balaram did not want to take sides either way. So he just went off on pilgrimage. So on his pilgrimage, he came to Namishiranya, and there, Romaharshan Sutta was addressing these sages. So when Lord Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, entered the assembly, all the sages stood up, except Romaharshana Sutta. He was sitting on the Vyasasana, and he thought, well, I don't need to stand up for anybody. So he was a little bit proud. And Lord Balaram immediately detected this, and he did not care for it, because he was showing this pride while sitting on the speaker's seat. So he chastised Romaharshan Sutta, saying this was very inappropriate behavior. Then he picked up a piece of kusha grass and touched him on the head and killed him. Lord Balaram has a certain way of dealing with situations like that. So all the sages said, whatever you do is perfect. We have no problem with you taking this step. However, we did promise Romaharshana Sutta that he would live for a very long time, provided he did the service of speaking in our assembly. So Lord Balaram said, I will do whatever you say. If you wish, I'll bring him back to life. And the sages conferred, and they said, no, that's all right. But we will nominate his son, Sutta Goswami, to take his place. And the father lives on in the son. So that's how Sutta Goswami came to speak before these sages, these assembled sages. Now, among these sages was Srila Vyasadeva himself, who was the original compiler of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he and many other sages were in many respects more advanced than Sutta. And this is why the sages said in the first chapter, you are very learned except in certain sections of the Vedas. One of the verses, I don't know if you remember from the first chapter, they kind of mentioned that. So nonetheless, they have elected him, and they have approached him with the humble attitude of an open-ended question, a number of them, okay, asking him to speak. So this is the effect of an open-ended question. It encourages people to talk. So if you remember Socrates and remember the Seven of Diamonds, you will learn that in all kinds of relationships, open-ended questions will open the doors for you. And again, if it's a person who's less advanced, then you ask him, what is your philosophy, for example? So what is your philosophy of life? They don't know that you're armed with nuclear weapons when it comes to philosophy. So just, what is your philosophy of life? And they'll, you know, 9 times out of 10, they'll make up something on the spot because they really haven't given it an awful lot of thought. And then, if again you remember this method, you'll ask questions about their philosophy. Now, you're all very young here. Maybe Dean will remember this. You remember a television show called Columbo with Peter Falk? So I don't know if anyone else has ever seen it, but this Columbo was a character. He was a detective. He's very scruffy looking, always wearing this, it's like old, out-of-date clothes, like an overcoat, even in hot weather, a beat-up hat. And he would come into a crime scene and just kind of be ignored by everybody. And then he would start asking these questions, these annoying questions. And very humble, very humble. And the person, he would ask the person, what were you doing at the time of the crime? And the person would say, well, I was doing this or that. Oh, I see. Or just one thing, I'm sorry, I'm kind of slow, I don't understand. How is it that you were doing this and that when your shoes show that you were doing that and the other thing? I'm confused, I'm sorry, please just help me understand. See? And this way, by these annoying questions, you'd always find the bad guy, right? Oh, yeah, one more thing. I'm sorry, I'm confused. So similarly, when somebody says, this is my philosophy, then you say, oh, I see, okay. Oh, just one more thing. I'm just trying to understand. Maybe you could help me understand. How is it that, and then you just point out this very blatant contradiction in their philosophy. Okay. So by that approach, you inspire people to speak. And it is said that a fool is not detected until what? Until he speaks, yes. So, you know, if you want to go undetected, just be quiet. And if you want to expose somebody, ask them questions. See? So this is why the more learned people are always asking questions. And the less learned are very eager to espouse them, their philosophy. You see, so this is the value of questions in relation to Krishna consciousness. Before we go on, are there any questions? Akshay? Good question. Sadhu Prishtoham. Sadhu. We'd have to look up where the accents fall in the word sadhu, meaning saintly person. I believe the word sadhu means to cut, right? Sadhu means cut. So in that sense, it's, yes, relevant. It cuts to the issue. So the sadhu Prishtoham. If you're familiar with astrology, you know this word prashna, which is in this verse twice, right? You go to the astrologer and you ask them a question that's on your mind. Just one question. They take note of the time that you ask them. And according to the time you ask them, they do a chart. And then they answer your question based on that. This is called a prashna. And they're available for $9.95 at many websites. Okay. But yes, sadhu. If it's the same word as saintly person, which I believe it is, it means cutting like that. Okay, other questions? Yes? Right. Yes, this is a very, very pertinent point, that when we're listening to people speaking nonsense or something offensive, then it's very hard to keep your equilibrium to ask a good question. Nonetheless, it's the best strategy. Because just like Columbo, he's disarming. You know, people don't get defensive when they're being asked a question very humbly. So they think that they are instructing you. Okay? If we become emotional, then the tendency is to just stop asking questions and making statements because we need to express that emotion. So the mind gets the better of our intelligence in that case. So intelligence means questions. So giving the intelligence the upper hand is very strengthening. It's very helpful in all kinds of relationships. It's very helpful in emotional situations. You know, just asking a pertinent, relevant question. What should we do? What do you think we should do? If you're thinking within yourself, I don't know what to do, then it should come out of your mouth, what do you think we should do? You see? As soon as you say, what do you think we should do, we immediately deflect our own insecurities, you see? As soon as we ask the other person, we put the burden on them. Well, what do you think we should do? We could say, I don't know what to do. Or we say, what do you think we should do? they might. What else could happen? They could start a discussion. Yes, they could say something, well, I think this, I think that. In any case, you're keeping your powder dry. You may have an opinion, but you're not throwing it out there prematurely. First, you want to find out what others think. Okay? We have a tendency in emotional situations to ready, fire, aim. Right? So asking a good question means ready, aim, fire. Taking first, making sure we got all the facts. Okay. Any other questions? Yes. I don't see. This is the amazing thing. In other words, yes, our questions manipulate, just like we saw with the diamond, with the card exercise. You can definitely manipulate people, like a used car salesman. You go and ask the used car salesman, how much does this car cost? What will he say? Say, well, okay, but if he's really a good salesman, he'll answer like Shruti Sagar. Well, what do you think it's worth? See? And yes, it is manipulative. There's no doubt. Whoever's asking questions is in control. Remember this. Whoever asks questions is in control. That's why the sages are asking sutta. They're actually controlling the course of the discussion by asking their questions. So, is it manipulative? Yes. It can be if the intent is manipulative. My point is that if our intent is to help somebody, it can also be useful for that purpose. And it's more useful than just trying to lay the philosophy on them. You see? And I'll say from my own experience, if you practice this art of asking questions, you will become a student of humanity. Because people are fascinating. If you go into a party and you start, whoever you talk to, you go over them and start asking them about themselves and their lives, their emotional response is, God, at last somebody is interested in me. Isn't it? And they are so happy to share with you. I've had conversations on airplanes with strangers who told me probably more than they tell their best friend, their intimate secrets, because they know they'll never see me again, and they're so eager to unburden themselves. You know, and every statement a person makes just leads to a next question, if you're in that mood of questioning. So it's like anything else. It can be used for Krishna or it can be used for manipulation. Don't think that, you know, every advertiser and salesman, good salesman, doesn't know this, right? Yes, yes. Absolutely. In other words, like say, just for a hypothetical example, let's say you're serving tea at Krishna lunch. And so people come and you have more of an opportunity than somebody on the serving line to talk with them. So you can say, you know, hey, here's your tea. Hey, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? Or you can say, so how's your day today? Or what do you study? Okay. So, what is the ingredient? And that may be the only exchange you have with them on that day. So, what is it? Ever get? Well, but I'm addressing your question here. Uh-huh. So, that takes what on your part? Yes. So what do the students think when they see somebody who's interested in them and is also showing patience? Yes. And what do they think about Hare Krishna people in general? Yes. Yes, they'll think some of us are not. So this is explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the principles of religion are established not by logic and debate, but by what? By the behavior of the devotees. Yes. By the behavior of the devotees. So, in other words, if we show courteous behavior, if we show patience, if we show all the qualities of a self-realized person, not right away, but very slowly, people will become attracted. It is much more important to behave nicely than to be able to try to mouth a philosophy, thinking that they'll get the absolute benefit of having heard the absolute truth, even if for just a moment. Yes, you're making advance. You're actually making advance. So that's a very good thing. Okay. Let's see. Andrea, did you have a question? No. Yeah. The birds in the nest. Where's breakfast? Rah, 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 rah. It's just about four things: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Olivia, let's go. Yes. Well, that's one statement. There are ways. Questions are always my first choice. So what kind of question might you have responded to that with? What's that? What's wrong with you? Okay, anything a little more subtle? How often do you invite nuns over to your house? If you can respond with a question, a good question, say, you'll find there's always a better effect. Okay? All right. I did want to just read over the translations of the next few verses. That was part of our curriculum this morning. Let's make sure we get that in, shall we? We just start the mic. Can I have a mic jockey, please? Just take it from table to table. Sorry, we're going to start with text 6. We're going to read text 6:20.
Text 6. The supreme occupation dharma for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self.
By rendering devotional service under the personality of God at Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world.
The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead.
All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gains. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in ultimate occupational service should never use material gains to cultivate sense gratification.
Life's desires should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation. Since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth, nothing else should be the goal of one's work.
Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan.
The seriously inquisitive students student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti.
O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation according to the case divisions and orders of life is to please the personality of God.
Therefore, with one-pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees.
With sword in hand, intelligent men cut through the binding knots of reactionary work, karma, by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to his message?
O twice-born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva.
Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma Supersoul in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee, who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted.
By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact.
Is that the last one?
As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness, and he becomes completely happy.
Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association.
Thus the knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruit of actions is terminated when one sees the self as master.
Certainly, therefore, since time immemorial, all transcendentalists have been rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, with great delight, because such devotional service is enlivening to the self.
So there is a progression in these verses. This last one is so ecstatic. Certainly, therefore, since time immemorial, all transcendentalists have been rendering devotional service to Sri Krishna with great delight, because such devotional service is enlivening to the self. So it takes us right from the beginning stages of bhakti up to this ecstatic love. It's so nice. So we don't have time to go through these and kind of connect the dots from verse to verse, but if you would turn to page 5 in this book, and we'll just read it in a condensed form. In poeticizing this, I tried to show the flow and these verses and how they're interconnected. Okay. And this will just take about 2 minutes. Okay. So starting on verse 24 at the bottom of page 5, that's the verse we did this morning. The questions you have raised are in themselves our very goal. Such questions deal with Krishna and can satisfy the soul. The foremost goal that you or any person can obtain is serving Krishna lovingly, as I shall now explain. This service must be selfless and continue constantly to satisfy a seeking soul to maximum degree. When you serve Krishna with devotion, he at once reveals the wisdom of detachment from this world and its appeal. But if you lack the interest to fulfill Lord Krishna's will, then all your work for money comes eventually to nil. Money seems less urgent as your love of God commences. Lord Krishna's servant uses it, but not to serve the senses. To live to please the senses is both needless and uncouth, for what's the good of human life if not to learn the truth? The truth is one, yet known to man in three distinctive ways. Great scholars know Brahman, or Krishna's all-pervading rays. Great yogis know the Supersoul, the Lord who dwells within. But devotees know Krishna, from whom everything begins. His service brings the highest truth, devotees realize, for serving Krishna purely has made them detached and wise. Whatever mode of life you live, as caste or skills prescribe, your work becomes perfected when the Lord is satisfied. So fix your mind on Krishna, who protects his devotee, and here, remember, glorify and serve him constantly. Beholding others slice the knot of transient addictions, what person would not want to hear of Krishna with attention? Serving those enlightened souls whose hearts are truly pure will make your taste to hear of Krishna even more secure. And as you gain a taste to hear the virtues of the Lord, Lord Krishna from within removes illusion in accord. A daily class in Bhagavat and service to the pure will nurse the ailing heart until it grows completely cured. By simply hearing topics of Lord Krishna every day, your dormant love for him will thrive and never go away. Then service to Lord Krishna, whose descriptions are sublime, shall root itself within your heart until the end of time. And once such loving service is established in your heart, the ill effects of nature's modes diminish and depart. As lust, desire, and greediness are swept out of your way, you move ahead to goodness and great happiness each day. In touch with pure devotion and relieved of low desire, and steeped in Krishna's science, you'll be thoroughly inspired. You'll pierce the knot of false attachment, elevate your soul, and end the chain of karma as your faith takes solid hold. Throughout the ages, striving transcendentalists delight in satisfying Krishna as their dormant love ignites. So this is the summary of these verses combined. This taking us from the beginning stages of Vaidhi Bhakti all the way up through a devotional service with attachment, taste, and even transcendental love. Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.